Produced by Jeffrey Griselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall, this is Yes Music Podcast episode 459. What did they do next? Part 18A, Trevor Rabin.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 459 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a little bit. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week marks something of a departure for us here at YMP Towers. In our ever-popular What Did They Do Next series, we've reached the point where Trevor Rabin left the band after the Talk tour in 1995. He went off to pursue his other musical avenue of choice, film scores. So that means we'll be listening not to a rock or progressive album next week, but a film soundtrack. That should be very interesting. We're also hoping to have Julia from the fabulous Rabin-esque blog with us next week, because she knows rather more than we do about Trevor's soundtrack work, and she'll be able to fill in a lot of the details for us. We also have a two pence this week, and just before I recorded this, Daniel Crone got in touch to say that the Arc of Life, the new Dave Kirsner band that we'll talk about a lot later on, has just been made available on pre-order on Amazon. So check out the show notes for a link to that. It's been a somewhat quiet week for me on the social media front because I had to send my phone away to be mended, and so I could only access the various platforms via my desktop computer. Anyway, there are still plenty of listeners adding fascinating stuff, so here's an incomplete list. Roger Dean is officially the hardest working man in the progverse, and Dave Fagan spotted his post on Facebook about his latest venture, the Secret Path podcast, on which he has recently interviewed Jeff Downes and Steve Howe, amongst others. In the community posts, Jeffrey Mason's massive haul this week included an article on ITV.com, which strangely describes Rick Wakeman as Yes frontman, another Rick Wakeman article describing his new collection of 70s material, interviews with John Anderson and Rick Wakeman, two reviews of Anderson's newly re-released Song of Seven, a review of Bill Bruford's Rock Goes to College, Blabbermouth.net's article about Rock Candy's Yes feature, Cashbox's 1976 report on Yes in the US, Lisa Frank's alternative artwork for Tales from Topographic Oceans, Fragile's 49th birthday, a review of Elias of Sun Hillow, a review of The Friends of Mr. Cairo from John and Van Gelis, an NME article on the band from 1971, an article about John Lodge's single In These Crazy Times, which features John Davison on backing vocals, a review of Live in Las Vegas, a review of Time to Word, a 47-year-old Cardiff poster for the Tales tour, and finally, Rick Wakeman again on the 80s programme, this time Razzmatazz, demoing keyboards. I think I actually remember that programme, and the video is well worth 2 minutes and 12 seconds of anyone's time. So, wow, epic stuff, Jeffrey. Also posting in the community were several others this week. Miguel Falcao added his superb Run with the Fox bass cover. As you may know, I play this repeatedly during December every year, and last year I started to learn the bass part myself. Maybe by next year I can film my own cover of Miguel's cover. Who knows? Doug Curran posted his signed copy of All Things Must Pass by George Harrison, which features Alan White, on its 50th birthday, and Dave Kirsner's now-not-so-mysterious announcement, which Mark and I will be discussing later in the episode. Brian Sullivan spotted a rather different version of Run with the Fox by I Am the Manic Whale. Actually, it's fantastic, so do find that and give it a listen. Bruno Mancini added his very beautiful version of Soon, and finally there were some fantastic comments on last week's show notes from Doug Curran, Dave Watkinson, Dave Owen, Jamie McQuinn, John Parry, Gary Andrews, Gary Betts, John Thompson and Simon Barrow. So very many thanks to them and to everyone who got in touch in any way this week.
Olá, sou o Miguel Falcão, de Coimbra, Portugal. Estão a ouvir o Yes Music Podcast.
So Mark and I are back with the next part of our What Did They Do Next series. Hello there, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Slightly hassled with family and technology today, but apart from that, I'm okay. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. A little bit of issue with my dog, but hopefully things will get resolved with that. Keeping my fingers crossed.
Okay, well, we will keep our fingers crossed as well. It's horrible when pets aren't well. Anyway, on to Trevor Rabin, who's the subject of this week's What Did They Do Next? And Trevor and Tony Kay both left the band after the Talk tour in 1995. So this must have been an absolutely exhausting time for the band, particularly Trevor Rabin, or maybe not particularly him, everybody, because at the end of the huge Union tour, the band sort of went their separate ways and it was all very complicated, and eventually Talk was put together, and Trevor put a huge amount of work into that, including producing it on computers for the first time and all that, and then a big long tour as well. So I think he felt, and Tony felt, that they were just exhausted by the whole experience and wanted to move on and do something else. And I think Tony, who we'll come back to and talk about in another one of these episodes, left the music business entirely at that stage. And Trevor Rabin had had enough of the sort of album tour approach and wanted to do something that he'd actually started to do, I've found out, a long time previously. The first time that he did music for films on a soundtrack was way back in 1976 with a film called Death of a Snowman. Now, I can't say it's a film I know, but if anyone's seen Death of a Snowman, I'd be fascinated to hear what that's about. So we're going to talk about Trevor Rabin and his cinema work, his film work, and he did some TV work as well, but mostly we're talking about film soundtrack work. Now, next week, we've managed to get Julie from the Rabinesque blog to come and talk to us about this soundtrack work, because it's frankly not something I know a great deal about in terms of Trevor Rabin's output. Is it something you've followed yourself, Mark?
No, not really. I mean, this is one thing about Trevor Rabin that I know very, very little about. I mean, the only thing I kind of know is the kind of origins of him starting this movie that I believe we're going to be talking about, which is The Glimmer Man. Yeah. If I'm correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. And that's because straight after leaving the band, which is what we normally talk about, he did provide some additional music to a film called Fair Game, which I think was pretty much the first thing he did straight after leaving, as I say. However, Mark Mancina was the person who did that score. So he only added little bits and pieces. And I can't find out for the life of me what the music was, and there certainly isn't a CD of Trevor Rabin's music which was released from that movie. I suppose we could watch the movie and try and find out which bits are Trevor Rabin, but maybe not. It was notable, that one though, Fair Game, because it was apparently Cindy Crawford's first starring role in a film. I'm not sure she's done very much more film work actually, but certainly she was in that. So what we're going to have to go for, as you say, The Glimmer Man, which was Trevor Rabin's first full score for the whole of the movie. And yeah, so what do you know about the origins of this then, Mark?
Well, I remember reading a couple of spots, and also there's a little segment in our favorite DVD documentary where Trevor Rabin was saying that through a friend of his, he had gotten in contact with Steven Seagal, who wanted to take initially guitar lessons from him. So apparently they arranged to get together and, you know, just, you know, exchanged, you know, licks and showed him a few things here and there. And apparently Steven Seagal was very pleased with it and said, that, you know, thank you very much for showing things like that. And he goes, if there's anything that you need that I can help you out with, I would gladly do it in exchange for, you know, showing me some of these things and doing these lessons with me. Yeah. And apparently Trevor Rabin said to him, goes, well, you know, I'm looking to get into doing movie scores. If you know anybody who might be looking to do or needs movie for film, if you could maybe refer me. And he goes, well, I just finished a film that needs music. And apparently it was just as simple as that. He said, would you be interested? And he goes, yeah. And that movie was Glimmer Man with him. Yeah. And Keenan Ivory Wayans was involved in it. And it was a big movie. I mean, apparently it had a like $45 million budget. So
yeah. Yeah, it's proper Hollywood stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I looked up the synopsis what this film was about. And it's one of those, I suppose, traditional sort of Hollywood cop films. Jack Cole, which is Steven Seagal's character, I think, was once a CIA operative known as the Glimmer Man because he could move so quickly and quietly through the jungle that his victims would only see a glimmer before they died. Having retired from doing that, he was he then, because he was versed in Buddhism and unaccustomed to working with others, he became a detective with the Los Angeles Police Department, despite this, I suppose. And he's partnered with the tough, no-nonsense detective Jim Campbell. And he has little patience for Cole's New Age philosophies and outsider attitude. Cole and Campbell must set aside their differences when they're assigned to track down a serial killer known as the Family Man, named for his habit of killing entire households. So that's the kind of film we're talking about. It's one of those action, thriller, cop type films. Is that the kind of film you normally go for, Mark?
Maybe when I was like in my, you know, between the ages of like 16 and 20, maybe I was not like huge into those kind of movies, but if they were in the theater and if I, you know, they caught me at the right time, like with those big kind of epic, you know, sort of advertisers like coming soon, Steven Seagal, like you've never seen him before, you know, oh, too many, many guns and action, you know, chases. And so, you know, when it's with that kind of thing, you know, maybe when you're younger, you kind of like think to yourself, oh, that's kind of cool. I'll go check that out. But it was never my thing, those kind of movies.
No. All right. Okay. Well, fair enough. Now, looking at his other output, though, we'll come back to this film in a minute. He, Trevor Rabin, has scored lots of films that I have heard of. So, you know, he has been extremely successful in this part of his career. So some that I recognize the names of, looking at his page on IMDb, were Con Air, Armageddon, And Armageddon, there's actually a Disney ride at Disneyland Paris where I went with my children a few years ago. We didn't go on Armageddon, the ride, but it was there and a huge production and you know, millions of dollars spent on producing that. Jack Frost, which, to be honest, I have, that's pretty much the only one I've seen of his. Jack Frost, which is a pretty terrible movie, to be honest. But it does have Trevor Rabin, as I think I've mentioned on the podcast years ago. It has Trevor Rabin actually in it. So he's in acting in Jack Frost with his band, and they play some rather good Trevor Rabin rock music on that. And it also includes Lou Malino the Third on drums. So that's quite fun to spot them taking part in Jack Frost the movie. And then some other ones I've heard of. Gone in 60 Seconds, Remember the Titans, Kangaroo Jack, Bad Boys 2, National Treasure, Coach Carter, Snakes on a Plane, which was an absolutely huge smash, wasn't it? And the TV series 12 Monkeys, based on the, I think, Bruce Willis film. So he really has been extremely successful, and he likes to point out his kind of claim to fame in this, although he's won lots of awards for his music in films as well. But his Titans Spirits from Remember the Titans in 2000 was used for NBC's coverage of the Summer Olympic Games, and also as a sort of backing track, I suppose, for Barack Obama's speech and celebration upon winning the 2008 US presidential election. So, yeah, very, very successful, really. And I don't know, and perhaps we'll be able to find out next week when we talk to someone who really knows about this stuff, just how successful he has been. And it seems that mainly he's done blockbuster, thriller, action, comedy, so quite a wide range as well. But this film itself is only available as a bootleg, the actual soundtrack from it. So I think we're going to have to, Mark, watch the film itself. Is that something which grabs you?
Oh, most definitely. I'm just absolutely thrilled with the idea of watching the movie. But I have discovered on the internet that there is actually a page available that has the music, I think, separately.
Right. Well, you can listen that to me. Yes, that would be fantastic.
Yes, so I will send you the link to that. But in mentioning the movies, actually, I was looking through the list as well and was surprised by how many of them that I actually had seen. Enemy of the State, I did see that movie.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Gone in 60 Seconds, I had seen that. Remember the Titans. The one movie that I saw that he did that I was very interested in, because I actually liked this movie, I was very excited to see it, was Rockstar. That movie had to do initially, that was the big hype, that it was apparently the story of a guy named Tim Ripper Owens, who ended up becoming the replacement for Rob Halford and Judas Priest. And apparently, Rockstar was supposed to be the movie of him, his life story of how he became the singer of it. But Judas Priest were quick to kind of downplay it, that originally the first part of the movie is very accurate to what happened. But then Hollywood came in and kind of screwed up the ending part of it and turned into something that totally was not afterwards. So apparently, if you're watching that movie and you're hoping to see how he got into the band, Tim Owens, take the first half of it as sort of accurate and then the back half as not.
Excellent. Okay, well, that's fascinating. So yes, I'm looking forward to this. This is really quite a departure for us to be watching a film or listening to the soundtrack of this film. We've never done this kind of thing before, and clearly it'll be different. Well, I'm imagining it'll be different kind of music entirely to what he was doing with Yes on Talk. But maybe there'll be a little bit of that soundscape that he created for Talk. Certainly the expansiveness of it, you certainly could call it a cinematic album in a lot of ways, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Talk was a very grandiose record. I think Talk was one of those records where I think Trevor finally decided that he might try to delve into the whole epicness of older Yes.
Yeah.
You know, with songs like Endless Dream and stuff like that, and even songs like, you know, Real Love and stuff like that. I think there's definitely elements of his cinematic work in it, maybe not heavily, but you can definitely tell that there's a lot more kind of, you know, string parts in there and stuff like that. You know, obviously it's not on keyboards, right? But you can tell that the concept is there. And maybe, you know, that's one thing I always was kind of thought there was a missed opportunity for Yes, is I think that the songs on Talk could have warranted some interesting videos to be done for those songs. And I wish they would have done something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it always does confuse me. I mean, I suppose it's just one of those things that happens with bands, but there have been at least two members of the band, Trevor Rabin, obviously, and Rick Wakeman, who are fantastic orchestrators. And yet, there's never really been an opportunity, or they didn't make an opportunity for any of that, apart from the only thing I can think of with Trevor Rabin was the string introduction to, was it Love Will Find a Way on Big Generator? It has that lovely string quartet introduction, which is fantastic, but unfortunately doesn't carry on through the whole song. So, yeah, a bit of a shame, I suppose, looking back, that they didn't have the opportunity to blend those two parts of what they do. Of course, Rick Wakeman had plenty of opportunities and still does to have massed forces and orchestras and choirs and so on. But shame in a way that Trevor Rabin didn't find a chance to do that for Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Wakeman, you had the, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth and stuff like that, where you had all kinds of, you know, orchestrations going on and stuff like that, or even Arthur on Ice and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think with Trevor, I think once he started becoming, and I guess we'll find out how successful he actually was, but I have a feeling that he did very well with this soundtrack thing, because, you know, he has a lovely home and, you know, he has some nice sports cars and stuff like that. So I'm guessing that he did do very well on that end of it. And I guess once you start getting success in that field, you know, sometimes you don't want to go and experiment and go off on a left field adventure when you're doing well with what you're doing at the time, right?
Yeah.
So who knows, right?
Fair, absolutely fair. All right, then. So looking forward to watching that this week and listening to the soundtrack, as I say, if we manage to find that, as you have said, it does exist online. And very much looking forward to speaking to Julia about this next week. But for the moment, thank you very much, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
So I think this is a very important two pence, and it's about an announcement which has sort of been made this week, but in other ways sort of not, but people have worked out what's going on. And we first found out about this from Jeff Bailey, a friend of the podcast and patron, of course. And it's got a connection with someone we've interviewed on the podcast, and that's Dave Kersner. But sort of the confirmation of this was on Facebook and also on Henry Pott's amazing Where Are They Now? Yes site, where he's updated his Arc of Life section. And this is what he says. So Arc of Life is a new band consisting of Billy Sherwood, John Davison and Jay Shellen from Yes, plus Dave Kersner in Continuum, Mantra, Vega, worked with Francis Dunnery, etc., etc., John Anderson, etc., and Jimmy Horn, who is ex-Circa, worked with Yes on Union, also worked with Conspiracy, Air Supply, Steve Bocero, and many others as well. Now, on his site, it's said for quite some time that they have completed an album that will be released on Frontiers Records. Davison described it in July this year, 2020, saying he and Sherwood had written a lot of music together. They had their own side band. We've got the album all ready to go, he said. So he was talking about an album launch sometime this year, 2020, or early next year, 2021. And now, added to that, Henry Potts has put just yesterday, I think, a full promo launch is expected in December 2020. So that's now. That's in the next few days, I suppose.
Yeah.
And this is all based on Dave Kersner writing on Instagram on the 11th of June 2019, way back then, about an upcoming album. And we've mentioned that he did mention that on the show before. But certainly, it sounds like this is definite now. And some people have called this Yes 2.0. And certainly, we're excited about it. So that's our little statement. This is Yes 2.0, and we're excited. Do you agree, Mark?
Well, I have a feeling that I was the one who started this 2.0 business. and whether it gets, you know, me into hot water saying that or not, I really hope it doesn't. But, you know, I've never been one to shy away from my opinions. And to me personally, I'm very excited about this band. I'm very excited about the prospects of it. I mean, I've heard people tell tale that, you know, because already when this got announced in typical Yes fan fashion, you know, and I love you guys out there, you Yes supporters, but you guys sometimes make me scratch my head very hard with your reactions to these things, because while there were some people that were very excited, like I was, with the prospect of having a, you know, a new band that could continue the legacy of Yes. You know, sure, maybe it's not going to be Yes, but I think that their idea is based around Yes, I think, like as far as, you know, their inspirations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's already those people on there commenting saying, this is not Yes. It'll never be Yes. If there's no John Anderson, there won't be no Yes. But, you know, I find these things very troublesome from people. I mean, get over it, people. John is not coming back. John is, even if he did come back, the man is in his mid-70s. I mean, he's not going to be doing this for much longer.
No.
You know, neither is Rick Wakeman. You know, he's set to retire very soon as well. I mean, realize that, people, that era is done. It's finished. Steve Howe, he's going to be next to go as well. Alan, he's pretty much on the way out. Why not embrace something new? Why not embrace something that could continue Yes's legacy? You know, even if Steve Howe can maybe give them their full blessing and maybe they can continue as Yes. I mean, I'm really just, you know, daydreaming here at this point. But you know what I mean? I mean, why, instead of being so negative about it, why not just kind of embrace it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I already heard people saying, he goes, oh, it's just going to be another record that gets put out and forgotten about. But, you know, why? If we get behind it and really support it, it won't be a record like that.
Yes, yes. And so this is the band which I got into a little bit of trouble a few episodes ago by saying that we should really look forward to what this band has to offer rather than another live album from Yes. And that's, as I said, got me into a little bit of hot water, but never mind. But now we know. So we always knew that Billy Sherwood, John Davison and Jay Shellen were involved. And there is no way you're going to be able to get away from these comparisons and people's thoughts and people's aspirations for this band. Now we know that Dave Kersner, though, and Jimmy Horn are definitely the fourth and fifth member of the band. And for me, I think that sounds great because Jimmy Horn is one of those people that people always talk about when they say who could replace Steve Howe in Yes. People always say Jimmy. And, you know, from what we know of In Continuum, particularly with Dave Kirzner, it really is gigantic, epic, universe-spanning music that he's into creating. And hopefully that means that that's the sort of style that this Arc of Life are going to go for. So does that lineup, that specific lineup, make sense to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, even if they just made the band with nothing about Yes in mind, I think it's a fantastic lineup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, all those people have been involved with many things together, whether it's, you know, working on each other's albums, appearing on, like, records like the Prague Collective, or even just, you know, doing these kind of secretive Yes sessions like Union. You know, they have known each other for a long time. They probably know each other's styles. You know, they probably admire each other's songwriting. So, you know what? When you have a bunch of people like that admire each other and who can work well together, and somebody like Dave, who also has that kind of knowledge about the technical end of things, like with his fantastic company that he has, that IK Multimedia. I mean, could you imagine the kind of technology that he can develop and help make music sound that much better, especially progressive music, which sometimes gets labeled as dinosaur music? Mm-hmm. You know, he can bring it into the 21st or 23rd century, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what he's done. I mean, I love the things that we've spoken to him about in the past with In Continuum and other things that he's done. And, you know, the fact there are so many links, aren't there, through Dave, because he's worked with John Anderson, as I said previously, and Steve Hackett and Francis Dunnery of It Bites and Stephen Wilson, Genesis, etc., etc. I mean, you couldn't get a more well-connected and a band with as many progressive roots and connections than this. I mean, it really is a super group, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, maybe not as a super group if, you know, to the general public, because I'm sure some of these people may not be known to, like, you know, Joe Average down the road. But for us people who are involved in this progressive world that we're in, this bubble of progressive rock or progressive music, you know, these names are very familiar. I mean, almost household names at this point. So I think in that light, it is a very much a super group.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay, well, all we can do for the moment is keep our eye on that. I'm sure there will be some more news coming very, very soon. And certainly I am very excited about it, as we said in previous episodes. But now that we have sort of confirmation that it's on its way and confirmation of the five members of the band, it really sounds absolutely fantastic. And, you know, a band hopefully that will stay together and produce lots of fantastic progressive music, which would be just wonderful. And great to see that Davison and Sherwood have been writing together. I think that's really, really exciting news. So have your say, obviously, on the show notes about this Two Pence. What are you looking forward to in this with this lineup, with this band? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you not think it's a good idea? Do you think it just deflects us from Yes? Have your say on the show notes for this episode. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
After our thoughts, here are those of Simon Barrow, who kindly sent in this audio.
Hi, Kevin and Mark. It's Simon Barrow here. One of the things I love about Yes Music Podcast is that, as well as looking back and looking in detail at the Yes catalogue and everything that's gone with it over the years, you also have the bravery to look to the future. And of course, one of the questions is, where next for Yes? And by that, I don't just mean the Relayer tour, which we very much hope might be able to go ahead next year. It's booked for pretty well the middle of the year, but COVID is still casting some doubts over that. Then, of course, there's the question of a new album. Seems to be some activity on that front, but also continuing hesitation. And you've been speculating a little bit about what a renewed Yes lineup beyond the historic members of the band, particularly Steve and Alan and now Jeff, what that might look like. No disrespect at all to those members, but as we know, in the past, Chris Squire and indeed Rick Wakeman have speculated on the possibility that Yes might continue beyond them and beyond any of those who have been members so far. Whether that's a realistic possibility, I think, depends to a significant extent not just on relationships and personnel, but also on the question of whether there are musical paths that the band can still tread. It's not just going to survive as a legacy band, it must strike out in new directions. And everyone must have noticed this week some fascinating news with the announcement of the impending launch of the new band Arc of Life, who will be producing an album in December with a big launch, apparently. Now, of course, Arc of Life consists of three existing members of Yes, Billy Sherwood, John Davison and Jay Shellen, who effectively is the drummer of the band now, although it's great to see that Alan is still participating. And along with them, Dave Kirstner, who's had a lot to do with Yes in recent years, and particularly Jimmy Horn, who goes right back to the Union album in 1991. And I must admit, when I saw that announcement, and we've been waiting for it, we've been knowing it's going to happen, I immediately thought the words, next generation Yes. You know, this is the kind of lineup that really could continue the Yes legacy into the future. Perhaps not directly under the name of Yes. At one point, Soft Machine reformed and used a label which enabled them, if you like, to transition from a massively important and historic past into a different kind of future. And they're continuing now, did a gig online the other day. I think there is a future for Yes music. I think there should be an openness to a future beyond the current lineup and, as I say, the historic members of the band. And that needs to be done in a way that actually pays real debt and gratitude to the massive Yes legacy. But certainly the younger members of the band who are going to be recording or have recorded already and will be launching their recording as Arc of Life deserve a say in how things go for that Yes legacy and might be able to contribute to it in significant ways. So, next generation Yes, is that a real possibility? Is Arc of Life perhaps the first move in that kind of direction? How will it be received by Yes fans? I don't know the answer to any of those questions, but I'm sure Yes Music Podcast will be on the case and its listeners will have a big say too. Cheers then.
Hello, this is Roger Dean and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Allegedly.
So, quite an episode this week. Just before we go, here's the patron update. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And half of the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, Dave Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian M.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. As always, thanks to Robert and David as well. So thank you very much indeed, as always, to those patrons. If you'd like to join them to help keep the lights on here at YMP Towers, then please just go to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or click on the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week, and that's enough, isn't it? Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week talking more about Trevor Rabin and his cinema career. In the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.